This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, I am so happy today. I have Bill Larson from Larson & Larson to talk about intellectual property questions that you have been sending me. And it is really a thrill to welcome you to Joy on Paper. Well, you know, it's been a couple months because with all the COVID and everything happening. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Good morning, Betsy. How are you?
Okay. Well, you... Oh, we are okay here in our area, at least. Although it is a little cold, and I just left my phone on, you know, you heard my ringing.
Typical weather for glorious Clearwater.
Yeah, I know. It's not at all. It's really strange. But it's, you know, it makes us appreciate when it's really great, right?
Yeah, it's the kind of weather, it's the reason I left New England was this kind of weather.
Exactly. And, of course, because normally we have such good weather and you can be out on your boat and having fun, right?
Yep, we're spoiled.
We are. Well, you know, it's funny. I have been having so much fun with some new writers. You know, I always say this program is for writers and those who dream of writing. And in November, which was National Novel Writing Month, I was so thrilled that so many of my listeners took up the challenge and wrote a novel in November. And it had to be, to be involved in it, you have to write 50,000 word novel. Well, you know, that's not easy. And I was so thrilled that so many of my listeners did. And they're coming back to me now after, you know, a month or so. And they're saying, I did it. And now what? Because these are all people who had never even thought of writing. One is a mailman. Oh, what do we call him nowadays? We have to say mail person. Well, he's a guy who delivers the mail. And he used to be my mailman. And he decided, you know, he was listening to the program. He used to, you know, drive around with his truck delivering the mail. And he listened to my program. And after all those years, you know, it's coming up to 7 years. It's going to be my 7th anniversary in March. Wow.
Well, all the greatest writers in the world were not recognized at one point in time before they wrote their first work, and some wrote great pieces that weren't recognized for 100 years later. So you never know.
You never know. And so I was thrilled. And they're all coming now to me and saying, you know, well, what do we do next? And, of course, one of the things that we're going to talk about is copywriting, making sure that you get everything right. And meanwhile, some of my other listeners have been sending me in interesting stories. And there's one particular one I want to talk to you about because it just hit me. It's so weird. This is a story, I think I sent it to you, the story about a man who was stealing manuscripts, stealing unpublished books, and from famous authors.
Yes, and it's been arrested.
Yeah. I mean, there's a real learning lesson here for people, because the way he did it, and we're talking, he was stealing from really important people. I mean, when you're going around and stealing, you know, from famous people, it's strange. I still don't understand his motivation.
And it's it's very unsophisticated style of scam, also phishing. And every single client that I have has not fallen victim to it, but has been phished by scammers out there. And I talk to my clients every single day when they call me and say, I got this letter, I got this email, I got this phone call, can you check it out? And 99.9 of them turn out to be scams, phishing scams. And do you know how the phishing scam works?
No, explain it.
All right, so the phishing scam basically plays on the vulnerabilities of all of us. We want to trust other people. That's in our nature to be trustworthy. And the second is vulnerability. People, by their very nature, are vulnerable, particularly when in regards to a cause or an interest they have. And the phishing scammer plays on those two vulnerabilities. And so they'll reach out to you with a communication that appears to be okay, and not a scam. It'll look very real. It'll sound real. It'll taste real. It'll smell real. But until you really check it out and find out it's a scam, if you lend into it and give that person any information, a lot of phishing scams look for passwords so they can get in your computers, but other scams look to either get your money or your intellectual property. If you fall into the scam, then the scammer is off and running with your property, and because a lot of times they're anonymous, you can't find them, or they could be in other countries. So it's a real big problem. You have to be very careful when an unsolicited communication is received.
Well, and this man was very sophisticated. I mean, he had multiple emails addresses, and one of the things that he did, you know, to make it look like it was real, he would change the M to an R and an N, so when you put them together, you know, for people who just look at the, you know, the top line of an email, they think it's real. And
right.
And I mean, it was.
And it's not. And the littlest bit of due diligence and your own sophistication on understanding how the scam works can easily vet them out. Okay. So when you get these solicitations, or you get an email, let's say. First of all, rule number one, never click on a link, never click on an attachment or anything like that if it comes in through the email. That's the number one way that they'll insert a worm or a virus into your computer. And number two is don't respond until you check them out. And there's a number of ways to vet out these communications, but you have to do your research and see what else is out there. If there's anybody else is talking about it, try to get multiple layers of verification of this person before you communicate with them. You have to take your time. You have to, you know, get that vulnerability out of the way, and that, you know, like lawyers do. Lawyers, by nature, we don't trust anybody. That's what we're taught to. We wait until we can verify it before we trust, and that's what you have to do. It's a sad state of affairs, but that's the way it is.
Now, what he hoped to do with these manuscripts that he was stealing, the raw manuscript, sending, you know, somebody like Margaret Atwood or Ethan Hawke, and he was taking their manuscripts and they're sending them, thinking they're sending them to, you know, Penguin or whatever. And I don't know what he was going to do with all of these manuscripts. But it was a many year operation, and he got many, many manuscripts.
And this is not an unusual type of scam, and it happens both to in literature and movies. For example, when movies come out in the movie theater, you can get them on the streets in Thailand and China and Korea before they even hit the theaters here in the United States. And you have to ask yourself, how in the world did they get the entire movie and got it on the streets before you even got it to the movie theater in the United States? And so they take these works and then they try to sell them counterfeit style, and that's how they make their money.
And this is so interesting how he was going to use the books or sell the books, you know, put somebody else's name on it. And this is happening. Pirating is happening. It is a definite problem in the business. Now, when I, as you know, years ago, I got ripped off because I actually physically gave my script to somebody very famous who liked it very much. And next thing I know, this person is doing a movie using my script almost completely. I didn't even bother to change names, you know. So
outright theft.
I mean, that was outright theft.
Change that much? They do very little effort to try to change anything, if it at all.
Yeah, and this was before the internet, of course, and it was so outrageous at the time. I was young, and I thought I couldn't believe it. Of course, I got involved in a lawsuit, which is a long story about never hire a somebody's friend's brother who just got out of law school to deal with intellectual property. I learned that lesson. That's why
an old fogey like me.
I don't know. You're not an old fogey. You're young and energetic, and I know that you're right on top of things because you belong to Ape Law, which is very important. You know intellectual property because you cannot take somebody who got his, you know, passed his bar exam 6 months before and think that he could go up against, in this case, he went up against five Hollywood intellectual property lawyers were in that conference room when I was ripped off. So, you know, that's why when I started Joy on Paper, the first few months, you know, it took me a while to get into this whole business of the publishing business. But then what I realized it after a year or so in, I realized I wanted to bring you onto the program because I trust you. I know that you're great. I know that you're respected in this whole intellectual property field, which is a very difficult field. It's a complex field. Because I don't want, you know, any people who are listening to my program to get ripped off. Yet I know some of them have, you know, in the past.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to be careful out there. You have to check sources to see if the people are real. And these kind of scams even happen to lawyers. The recent scam was the lawyer would get an email.
Are you there? Oh, boy, he dropped off. Okay, hopefully he'll call back. These things happen. Perhaps it's the weather. I would have expected Carol J. Perry to be in the studio today because whenever she comes to the studio, we get this spooky kind of weather. So maybe she's thinking about the program right now. She's very funny. I hope he calls back. Oh, we could call him. Well, probably he'll call back. And we're just waiting. Big Ed in the control room will get him on the line if we have to. But I hope that he'll call back. And he probably is still talking and doesn't know that he's not on the air. But, yeah, this is a interesting subject and one that I want to pursue. And I hope he will call back in a minute. But and Carol J. Perry is not here. Although it is, I will tell you, it is a Witch City mystery kind of day here in Florida. And she's probably thinking about it because she has a deadline coming up. And I know she's working hard. She has a new book coming out in April. It's called Till Death. And it is book 12 in her Witch City mystery series. And this is really exciting for everybody who follows a series. You know, you have this romance, you have this thing happening. And finally, we have a wedding in Till Death. But now we have Bill Larson back on. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, we've had some brownouts here with this weather, and electricity keeps going on and off.
Yeah, I know. That happened to me earlier in the morning. My television went off twice, and it had to do that whole rebooting thing. Well, I'm glad you called back. So tell us what you were talking about, a lawyer getting ripped off.
These scams are very sophisticated. The one with the lawyer, I don't know where I got cut off, but what happened was is the lawyer would get solicited by a potential new client who said they had a very big deal and they needed to put a whole bunch of money into the trust account, and they'd send a very large check, which appeared to be valid, and they'd deposit into their trust account. And then the supposed deal would go through very quickly, and the deal would be less for than what it was, the amount of money that the supposed client sent to the lawyer. And so then the client says, all right, just, you know, give me back my portion that we didn't spend. And it all turns out to be a scam. The check bounces on the lawyer. And by then, the lawyer has paid out the supposed client. And that was a very effective scam against lawyers.
Oh, I'm sure that went through all
of them. I got hundreds of them. Yeah, I just delete them and I mark them as spam. But you have to be on guard all the time now, particularly with the information world that we live in and the internet, because information is just so easy to obtain. So they can obtain information about you, which makes them sound legitimate. Because they're talking like they know you, and that's another part of the scam that makes it work.
Oh, they are very clever. I've had so many writers who have sent, you know, things to Hollywood on the with the whole premise that these companies that are sending them are real legitimate production companies and are interested in their books, turning them into a movie, and all they want to start is $350. Well, I mean, I can tell people, you know, having worked in Hollywood, that's not the way that books are turned into movies. But many have, and I have one particular writer here, right in our area in Tampa, and he, over the course of being asked repeatedly, like first he started with $350, and then they needed to do a synopsis, and that was another $400, and it built up to finally he gave them about $1,300. And then his wife found out, and she nearly divorced him. But
Well, it's no fun getting scammed.
Well, and I told him, you know, why don't you turn this into a film, a real book, and maybe somebody will pick it up. But
the other part about a scam is that most people are don't feel too good about it. No. They don't really want to brag about it, and they don't want to take action because they don't want to, you know, replay the scam for everybody to know. So a lot of people just, you know, bury it and put their tail between their legs, and that's it.
Yeah, that happens.
A lot of my clients get scams, a very official-looking paper that looks like it's coming from the trademark office saying that you have this money due, and just send the check here. And a lot of my clients, without calling me, just send the check and pay it.
I know. I get these things all the time. Well, of course, you've done 4 patents for me, so I get a lot of patent scams.
You're going to get solicitations of all kind because patents, copyrights, and trademarks are public information. Anybody can go and find out all the information. They can send you an official-looking document and solicit money. And so you have to be careful about that. You know, pick up the phone and, you know, fax it over to your lawyer and say, is this real? And almost every single day one of my clients sends me this document and says, is this for real? And I say, no.
I know. I've done it. I've sent you things. One of the things that one of the stories I sent you is this one about authors win a $7.8 million default judgment in a global piracy lawsuit. Now, of course, they won the $7.8 million default judgment. I don't think anyone's going to collect on it.
No, because they're out of the Ukraine and you're not going to find them.
Well, I guess Ukraine just can't stay out of the news because, I mean, when something like that happens, it's frightening for an author because one of the things that of the authors who's been on the program several times, and he sent stuff to a company, and he believes, you know, the thing is, if you write a book, and then somebody takes it and pirates it and changes the name or even just a little bit and sells it, you know, into foreign language. And you don't know about it because what are the chances of you being able to read Romanian, you know? So the people who...
You have to have an elaborate watch program. So for a lot of our clients, we have watch programs. So we have software and vendors that we use to look internationally for counterfeiting. But the first thing always starts with filing your copyright application. So you just talked about the folks that wrote 50,000 words in November. I mean, as soon as that was done, they should have gone straight to the copyrightoffice.gov and filed their copyright application for $50 and registered their copyright. And the nice thing about the copyright registration is that you don't have to register in every country of the world. As soon as you register in one country that's a member of the Berne Convention, which is all the biggest countries in the world, you have protection in every single country. So if they infringe you in Romania or Australia or wherever, you can just go over there and immediately file a lawsuit in that country and sue them for copyright infringement without doing any additional filing, which is different than patents and trademarks.
Well, that's something that's very important for authors to know, and I hope that those 5 plus the other ones, because I think there are more who just haven't contacted me yet, and some of them didn't actually make it to 50,000 words, so they feel like, you know, they're not ready. But you know, the part of
file it anyway.
Yeah,
it has to be done.
Exactly.
You file it.
You don't have to have it completed. You can do a partial,
complete, or edited, or final, or anything. Just get it in there, and that puts a time stamp on it. So if somebody else would try to get it surreptitiously and then file in front of you. Imagine that. You wrote it, somebody else got a hold of it, and they filed a copyright in front of you and got the registration. Now you have to unwind the registration of the bad guy. Imagine how expensive that is.
Exactly. So it is important. I tell people the word property, when it's intellectual property, property is value. And as you said, you never know. I mean, something you might write today, and some authors
10 years from now.
Yeah, it suddenly it can hit the right person, and perhaps somebody wants to make a film out of it. Perhaps it's just relevant at a time. Like you write a story about. Like somebody, you know, you write a story about a pandemic.
Years.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to do any renewals, anything. I mean, once you file it, you're done. And the Copyright Office has set up a very good website where you can do it yourself. It's very easy. The form is very easy to fill out, and they have what are called circulars. So just go read the circulars, and it tells you how to fill out the form. You upload your work. You pay your $50 on your credit card, and boom, it's copyrighted. It's that easy. You don't need a lawyer.
Exactly. But I highly recommend people. It's wonderful to have a lawyer in your back pocket because you never know. And from my own experience, boy, oh boy, I will tell everybody that probably everybody listening has seen my film. Nobody knows it's my film. I am still under this. When you sign this non-disclosure forever thing, they're serious about it, right?
Non-disclosures are pretty weak. In the state of Florida, they're frowned upon. And typically, non-disclosures don't last longer than 3 years. There's not a lot of judges that will enforce a non-disclosure past 3 years.
I don't know about in California. I think they're a little. You know, the
court system out in California is special in their own special way.
Oh yeah, it's very special because the studios control what happens in that area. But Bill, it's wonderful to talk to you. How's business?
We're so busy. We're fighting them away.
Well, that's great because a lot of people, I think, were thinking up, inventions during this time, and
the pandemic turned everybody into entrepreneurs. Everybody wants to have their own business. They don't want to go back and work for other people now. So everybody's starting their own business, and they're coming up with trademarks and patents and copyrights. So it's been really great for intellectual property attorneys.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that. So how do people contact you? What's the best way?
The best way is, larsonpatentlaw.com, which is my website. And you can just leave me a email there, and I'll call you back, or I'll email you back with your, you know, answer to your questions, or point you in the right direction, or send you the form, or, you know, or if you have some big deal that you want done, then I can, you know, give you an idea of what's the best strategy.
And we'll add one more thing before I let you go. Please, everybody, do not sign any contract, right, without a lawyer, and do not agree to anything in an email without a lawyer.
Which can be a contract. You don't even have to sign it. If somebody says, hey, about this, and you respond, yes, that's a contract.
Yeah, that's, you see, people do not understand that. And that's one of the things I really wanted to get through people's head, that if you get an email and they ask you to commit to something and you say yes, it is a contract.
That's a contract.
You know, and this is something
for an acceptance.
Exact. People don't understand it, and it has gotten, again, it's got one of my listeners in trouble because she said
an email, you know, contract.
Yeah. Don't do it, people. Listen to Bill Larson because he knows what he's talking about. Because explain the organization that you belong to, because it's a very important organization.
Yeah, one of the best places for resources on intellectual property is the American Intellectual Property Law Association. Also, the ABA, the American Bar Association. Very good free information. There's all kinds of blogs for the big websites with all kinds of free information. So everything you need is out there if you look. And if you just take some time and read and learn up on how important intellectual property is to your business venture, then you'll do better.
Okay.
That's problem.
Well, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, thank you so much for joining me today. It's the beginning of the year, and I look forward to talking to you many times over the next few months, because I know that many of these people who were involved in NaNoWriMo are now really moving forward.
Just send them in, yeah.
Okay.
Send them in and push them to me, and I'll respond. And, you know, we want to keep everybody safe and well, and making the money they deserve.
Exactly. Thank you again, Bill.
Thanks, Betsy.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. All right, we're going to play a book buzz. This is the one from Bria Burton, who, this is her January pick, and I want to play it again because she has a really wonderful voice for book buzzes. And Rita Moreau is going to come into the studio next week, and she's going to be taping a lot more. But let's listen to Bria Burton's first book buzz for 2022.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2020 release in audiobook, Sunborn, by author and Nebula finalist Jeffrey A. Carver. Sunborn is book 4 in Carver's The Chaos Chronicles, and Skyboat Media produced this audiobook with stellar narration by Grammy and Hugo winner Stefan Rudnicki. Sunborn is also available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. This highly imaginative space opera, Sunborn, picks up where the previous installment left off, with John Bandicoot and his alien companions traveling in a star spanner bubble towards a way station for what they'd hoped was much-needed R&R. But instead, they're alerted to impending interstellar destruction from hyperspatial gravity waves of unknown origin. Stars in the Orion Nebula are dying, and an AI at the way station tasks this collection of capable compatriots with averting cosmic disaster. Aboard a space and time manipulating ship called the Longview, Bandicoot and his crew encounter otherworldly beings and multidimensional travelers. Yes, your mind will be stretched. For hard science fiction fans, this book may be a bit far out, even according to the author. But dabbling in fantasy, in my view, enhances the reading experience of this exciting story. Intriguing character dynamics, nonstop action, and point of view shifts that include bringing readers inside the mind of a sentient and singing star are just some of the elements this fantastical tale has to offer. Author Jeffrey A. Carver has been publishing science fiction since the 1970s, including the novelization of the Battlestar Galactica miniseries on Sci-Fi Channel. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. Woo, this is interesting. His name is Richard Cerulli. I hope I pronounced it right. And the name of the book is Demitasse Divorce. Is falling in love a cruel game we call happiness? Hi, are you there, Richard?
Yes, good morning, Patsy. Thank you for this time and opportunity.
Okay, do you like to be called Richard or Rick or what?
Yeah, Rich works.
Rich.
I'm very informal.
Okay, I like Rich. It's a good word. Rich is a good word.
Yeah, I like it too.
I like it. It's one of those words that when you hear it, you say, yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, well, this is fun. You know, I don't normally... this book is fascinating. You know, when I got it, it was very funny that just like a few days before I got it, I was reading a book of poetry, and one of the poems is about absinthe, and it's by J.S. Lamb. It's called Dark Fruit, and it's a wonderful poem. And so when I was reading your book and I got to the part where you're writing about absinthe, I thought, oh, well, this is fun. And so I wanted to have you on the program today. You know, this book is a little racier than most of the books I do. But I thought it was appropriate. You know, it is a book that's, I suppose, from the boomer generation. This is funny. It sort of reminds younger people that older people had sex. So I just thought it would be fun to have you on the program.
Well, thank you. I look forward to sharing the story.
Yeah, well, you have to tell us about it and tell us about, you know, I love anybody who writes about themselves, you know, all these blurbs that people put on their books and about their on Amazon. And I like that you call yourself a Renaissance man, living his life as an author, playwright, columnist, producer, poet, photographer, and songwriter. I thought, that's pretty cool. That's a nice way to be able to describe yourself.
Yeah, it's a good way to round out life. And, you know, as existentialists like to say, take your existence and bring it to pure essence.
Okay, well, you've done it in this book. So do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, the book takes place in the Hudson Valley in the Cold Spring area, which is a favorite spot for me. It takes place circa 1990-1992, and it's a existential and erotic romance. As two people meet by happen chance, a synchronicity, at a coffee shop. And as they talk and they have this conversation, they're both drawn to each other, and they realize they're both, and I'll be careful how I say it, they're both getting out of a very bad, unromantic marriage. And Elia, who's the architect and the very sophisticated, educated type of fellow, falls for NES, who's his complete opposite, who's an actress and a bit of a hedonist. And, you know, one of the storylines is, could we find harmony in the analogy of opposites? So they just find themselves caught up in this very hot romance, and then the book takes off. I don't want to give too much away.
It takes off, all right. It takes a lot off.
Well, yeah, and and you know, the book takes, when I say existential, I don't want to turn possible readers off that it's this deep existential work. Really, it's this is the revised edition, because at the advice of my publicist, Darcy Rowan, thank her very much for all her support and guidance. On the first version, I left out a few chapters, and I cut back a few chapters because I was afraid it was going to put me in a different genre. And she insisted, no, you put that back in. So when I wrote the, revised it, I put in the WASH chapters, which I'll call them, the expanded chapters, and I also wrote it in the first person.
Well, you know, let's go back to a few things. I like that you use the word existential to describe your character. It's funny. Not too long ago, I was talking in one of my interviews. I was talking about that I read Camus when I was 16. I was, you know, a very advanced reader, and I was talking about existentialism, and people don't understand what it means. So, how do you describe an existential person?
Well, you know, for many people who are not familiar with it, it's almost like a dirty word or something they stay away from. They think it's a very negative philosophy, which it's not. And a lot of the great existential philosophers came from a broad background. You know, some were believers, some were atheists, some were agnostics, but they were all dealing with what we all deal with, and we probably don't know that most people are existentialists, but don't know it, because in those quiet moments when you're thinking or you get into that little brain virus, you start questioning life, yourself, and what it's all about. And so I think it opens people's eyes in a very easy way to how we navigate life through an existential view, especially relationships. Because it is trying to deal with the absurdity and uncertainty of life, and which this book is really about. So you're right. It's one of those words that people fear, and you never bring it up at a cocktail party. Yeah, it's a good way to turn people off, you know.
Yeah, well, you start talking to me. Well, generally, I discovered very young that the minute I mentioned Camus, I lost people. So right there, it was the beginning of you know, understanding that you cannot go around talking about existentialism. What we can talk about is I want to talk about absinthe, which plays a part in the book. Do you want... So, now, you know, many people don't know what it is, or they've heard it in relationship, perhaps, to something from Hemingway. Explain what it is, because I have my story about absinthe that I can share, too.
Yeah, well, when I approach the book, you know, like most artists, you're just sitting around drinking coffee, you know, al fresco, and thinking, wow, what am I going to do next? And what I did is I bought a copy of 50 Shades of Grey. Now, ooh, you know, I always support authors, and certainly would never speak ill of a fellow or, you know, a fellow author. But when I read the book, it was good because it opened women up to their, you know, sensuality and, you know, get closer to it. But what the book was really missing is that it was just heavy on the physical side. And I said, you're in this relationship, two people meet, they're hungry for romance that's been denied them for years, you know, they're hitting middle age. And, you know, if you're going to be with this partner, most of your time is spent in conversation or doing things. And I thought that's a part of relationships that sometimes people overlook.
So where'd the absinthe come in? Did you try it?
Oh, the absinthe?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, doing my, you know, doing my readings on existentialism, the French pulled together, the French and Swiss had this drink absinthe. And I didn't really know this, even as an existentialist for years, that this drink is the drink for philosophers and artists, which I have to say, I'm a little remiss. I should have known that. And it was illegal back in the 1990s. So I had to throw that in and had a little fun with it.
Okay. Did you actually ever try it?
Yes, I did.
The real stuff, where in France or in Switzerland or not in America?
Well, you know, all the myths they say about it seem to be true, because it does spark your creativity, and it's also an aphrodisiac. So I just thought that little, just making reference to it, would just add a little bit more flair to the book.
Well, it's funny. Of course, being a reader and knowing about absinthe way earlier than most people ever heard about it. And when I traveled to Europe, I had the opportunity to stay at one point. We rented a place in Switzerland near a village where they make the real absinthe. Because what is sold today is not real absinthe. It's really not.
That's right.
It's not at all what real absinthe is. Now, my husband doesn't drink. Well, no drinking, no smoking, no swearing. So, but I explained to him my interest in why I wanted to meet somebody who is actually making the real absinthe. It is still. It's just not something that anybody advertises, and I wanted to try it. So I said to my husband, "I'm going to try this," and he'd already known that you know it's illegal, it's going to kill you, it's, you know, all this. My husband was like, I mean, a person who would never really, I rarely did he even have a glass of champagne at a wedding, so. So we went to this place, and it was wonderful. It was a really, you know, to be in Switzerland for a few weeks and to live in a real chalet, in a real village. It was wonderful. But I tell you, it turned out, and since we were living there actually we were there for 3 weeks, I had brought with me, this is funny, I traveled in Europe, with a peanut butter. Now they don't eat peanut butter in Switzerland. They don't eat peanut butter anywhere in Europe. And I made, because it was just the kind of day that I would make peanut butter cookies. And I made peanut butter cookies. And I brought peanut butter cookies to the gentleman who was making real absinthe, and just as a, you know, neighborly thing you do in Switzerland, you go to people's house and they bring you cakes and they bring it. It was absolutely charming, and I brought him the peanut butter cookies, and he gave me this tiny glass with absinthe in it, and I wanted to taste it, and I tasted it, and I don't like it. I didn't like it at all. And I thought, but meanwhile, while I was tasting that, he started on the peanut butter cookies. Now, he had never had a peanut butter cookie. He had never had peanut butter in his life. And he could not believe it. And he said to me, now this really excites me. So there I am with a guy who makes the original 100% the kind of absinthe that used to kill people and would still kill people if they drank it, you know, to any extent. But he was getting high on my peanut butter cookies. He thought they were the coolest thing in the world. Yeah. Life is interesting,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a very powerful drink, and quite honestly, I don't really drink it that much. And when I do, I just mix a glass. You know, you got to mix it with the water and the sugar because the proof is so high. And I usually sip it for 4 or 5 hours because, it's a very strong drink. And I'm not a drinker, so I just take a few sips at a time. And I said, I have to experience this if I'm, quote, an existentialist. Otherwise, I'm going to take back my existentialist card and just see how it really works, you know, experience. And, you know, I just thought it just added so much to the book. Because,
well, yeah, it was great. Know, it was a great part of the book. It was interesting, and I have to tell people that, as I mentioned, J.S. Lamb has written a really fascinating poem about it, and his book is going to be coming out sometime in the spring, and it's called Dark Fruit, and that's one of the poems in the book. You've written a fascinating book. I think it's one that. You know, many people actually will enjoy. Tell us a little bit about your writing for off-Broadway shows. I have a few minutes. I just want to hear that.
Well, I started, I've always been a good writer. It just came naturally from my years. And, you know, I spent my earlier years, you know, I was married at the time, you know, so, you know, the family jobs. I was working in a quantitative field, engineering. And I started teaching. I was teaching economics and statistics. And I said, this is really boring. I said, I don't like this. You know, I'm not really reaching my essence in life. I'm doing it out of necessity. So about 6 years ago, when I was about retirement age, I just said, I'm going to make a shift. I'm just going to retire, walk away, and start writing and doing what I want to do in life. And so I wrote my first play, which was Via Dolorosa, started my own troupe. And what motivated me is that I know a lot of friends and family that I lost through mental illness. And I did some research, and sadly, the statistics are that only 17% of adult Americans are in optimal mental health. And I thought that was rather disturbing. So my first play was about my mother.
I'm sorry. I'm running out of time here. But what I want to do is I just want to tell people you have a website. It's very interesting. And it is based on, the name of the book is Demitas Divorce, and it's available online. But tell us, about your website, where you want people to go.
Well, yeah, if you check the website, obviously my books are there. There's also my music, my writing, and recordings. I write. I don't perform. There's a lot of plays, and I have a lot of short, what they call psychotronic plays, which are short plays that deal with specific issues. So the website is www.demitasplayers.com.
And it's very interesting. The artwork is interesting. The stories that you write are interesting. Is that your artwork?
I'm sorry?
Is that your artwork?
Yes. No, on the website. No, it's not.
It's a beautiful website. It's very nice, and you have some interesting stories there. People can go there, and it's called Demitas Players, because you are involved in playwriting. And I want to thank you so much, Rich Ciruli. It's spelled C-I-R-U-L-L-I. I pronounced it right, correct?
No, you got it right on target.
Yeah, you have to have a CH sound with a name like that. So, Richard Ciruli, a really fascinating book, and I enjoy talking to you today.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I hope people get a chance to read it. I'd like to think it's a book for all seasons.
I think so. It definitely is. Anyway, again, thank you for being on Joy on Paper, and you take care, okay?
You too. Thank you. And have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. You know, as I said, I just found this book very, very interesting. And, wow, the time has gone very quickly, because I did want to say, again, I want to thank Glenn Erickson so much, because I have been so happy with Rhonda Green, who is a big advocate of Toastmasters, just like Glenn is. It is a wonderful, wonderful organization, and I hope that all of you will check into right now everybody's doing it Zoom-wise, which is okay, you know. Eventually you want to get into a situation where you can actually talk to crowds of people, and hopefully that's happening very soon. But meanwhile, you can do it on Zoom and join your local Toastmasters organization. And as I said, Glenn Erickson is a great believer in it, and I want to thank him so much for supporting Joy on Paper. And, you know, just go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com. All of the book buzzes that Devon Miller is doing for children's books, now Bria Burton is doing for sci-fi books, and of course, Rita Moreau, who we call One Take Rita here at the studio, and she's going to come in next week and do a whole bunch of wonderful, wonderful book buzzes for books that are coming up, or sometimes books that we have. I've interviewed the authors, and I know one of them that she's going to do is for Carol J. Perry's Till Death, because my sister, and I want to say a special hello to my sister, Natalie, who is called the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, and she is home today. She was in the hospital for a little while. She's home today, and she is listening, and I want to say, Natalie, I am so happy that you are home. And she's probably, the minute the program is off, she will start reading another cozy mystery, because she helps me go through all the cozy mysteries, and she picks out the ones that she loves, and she loves Carol J. Perry's cozy mysteries and Rita Moreau's cozy mysteries. Rita is also working on some really great, great mysteries coming up, and she's going to be on the program. We're going to have her back on the program, I think, sometime in March. Well, actually, for the anniversary of Joy on Paper, because we're going to have everybody who does book buzzes here, hopefully in the studio, and we will all talk about the 7th anniversary of Joy on Paper. But meanwhile, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her new series, Haunted Haven, set right here in Florida. And of course, Jack Reacher is coming to the streaming video February 4th. My goodness, that's going to be so exciting. And I am so happy for Lee Child and Andrew Child and Tasha Alexander. The whole bunch of them have been involved in Jack Reacher from the beginning. So absolutely wonderful. And say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Oh, thank you, Ed. He saluted me. And I saluted him, because I should have been a general. I wanted to be a general. Oh, I would have been a great general. Boy, oh boy, they need a general today. I can tell you, with everything that's happening in the world, I should get over to Washington, D.C. and take over the War College, because I would have been a great general. Everybody, have a wonderful day, a joy-filled day. Bye-bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.